Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Wednesday Night War Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamblett and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of NXT. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review the Wednesday Night War, and if you want to know our thoughts on AEW Dynamite, that is available right now as a podcast. We also review Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamblett and Sidgwick to review NXT, an eventful episode, Michael Hamblett.
Yeah, good, not great would be the TLDR of this one for me. There was some setting some things up again. There was a continuation of a couple of things I really, really loved. But for the most part, I think when we reviewed Halloween Havoc and then we previewed this one and talked about this being a post, almost like a post pay-per-view NXT, it felt like that. If they are attempting to try and actually just get from takeover to takeover again and not be dragged back into a war, which they've pretty much lost in spite of the odd viewership win, I think you're going to get these episodes every now and then. There was nothing so overwhelmingly awful, but there wasn't too much I thought was particularly dynamic.
Yeah, I didn't really enjoy this. And that is, I guess, to their credit, because I'm usually, well, as of about 2 months ago for the entire year, I've been like, who cares about any of this? The sad thing is, I do care now a little bit more about this because they've been doing the work and they just did so many NXT things on this frigging show. It's like, oh, hey, lads, like, you literally might be better than this. But there's two wrestlers in particular that I just thought, what are you doing with these? Why are you doing this with these now? We'll get to it. We will get to it.
There were a couple of things that I really enjoyed on this this card, though, this show, and we will get to them in due course. We started, though, with Dakota Kai versus Ember Moon. An exciting development, I thought, this. Ember Moon was in control, got posted, so Dakota Kai eventually just targeted her arm and shoulders. Moon powered out to hit a deadlift powerbomb, looked great. Later on, she got a flying codebreaker for a near fall. But then Moon goes up to the top. Whilst all that's going on, Raquel Gonzalez causes a distraction. That allows Kai to trip up Moon, hit a draping GTS, and get the 1-2-3. A surprising win, Hamblett, for Dakota Kai, but an interesting development in this story.
Yeah, I didn't expect the result. Ember Moon is so brilliant still in flashes, but I'm not sure this booking was particularly complimentary to her. It was too long. It was too long. This went on too long. The middle portion of the match really, really sagged. And I don't think it particularly came out. That code breaker that you mentioned was at the point at which I thought this came back to life. Ember Moon needs a hot start, a big finish, and far, far less flab in the middle portion of the match where you can kind of see, is she a little bit nervous? Is she a little bit, like, rusty? I don't know how it would be kind about this, and I don't know how long it would continue to be kind about this. So decent, but not amazing and not the best possible exposure of either of these two. I think if you take about 7 or 8 minutes off this, you've got a proper little firecracker of an opener, and instead it felt a bit dull by the end.
Yeah, there was a heat spot from Dakota Kai, and, you know, I think she's really talented, but I was bored to friggin' tears. I was like, how have you come back after last week's show, that actually getting back into that conversation after like producing like a really damn good show to like fill time. So it felt like, oh, how do you have a good match? It felt like a focus group thing. How do you have a good match? Right, well, you go however long it did, that amount of time. How do you fill it? Nah. Like they couldn't. So the heat was boring, but it did explode into 3 minutes of like really, really strong pro wrestling. And I thought, got a lot out of Ember Moon's fire up spot because she's not just this spectacular wrestler who can do spectacular things that she can't really do for too long because they are absolutely murder on the body. Like I thought a fire was really strong towards the finish. And then it was doused by the fact that she looked like a tit. It's like one of three matches on this show. The finish was just so at WWE.
Mm.
Such a WWE finish. And a kind of a WWE result, this. Like, why Booker to lose? She's just come back. She's just been, like, heralded as, like, the ace figure that never was because it wasn't a time or whatever. And she just feels like this result has made her recede into the background, I think.
It's tricky, this. So
garbage. It wasn't even, like, an elegantly done distraction.
No. It's the defeat. To address that, I think this is a misunderstanding of their attempt to return to wins, losses, rank, all the things that AEW put up front, NXT have got to try and make exist in the background because they were kind of called upon that and rightfully so through a lot of 2020. And I think this is a bit of a response to that in them having this be a result rather than it be, say, thrown out for a disqualification or something like that. They've had Dakota Kai go over here. But I just think they've misread the room a little bit here. I don't think Ember Moon was particularly in the position yet to lose. And you're not going to get that right 10 times out of 10, but I think they got this one quite badly wrong. It's a great rehab for Dakota Kai, this idea that whoever you thought I was, I'm not. Like, this suggests that there's probably more to do with Ember Moon, but they just did so much here. I don't particularly want to see that either. So I thought this was quite damaging, a defeat. They gave you a finish, and they gave you somebody actually winning, but I'm not particularly sure that the loser is going to be able to recover quite as easily as they might think.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit of a deflating loss for Ember Moon as well. And, you know, we've speculated on the direction that they may be heading in with so many contenders in the women's division. Maybe this was a part of it to try and, you know, explain why other members of these teams would be together. But, yeah, I was surprised by it. And then I thought, oh, not sure that's a good idea. Like you say, Sid, with such a hyperbolic arrival for Ember Moon to then just have her lose because Raquel Gonzalez effectively just got up on the apron.
Yeah, it's one of those as well. Like, didn't really feel like this big picture. Oh, she's lost. Just felt like no one lost and no one won this match in a way that just does become a blur in the end. And there was more of that on the show.
A couple of backstage interviews. We had Shotzi Blackheart talking about choosing to face Toni Storm off the back of hosting Halloween Havoc, of course. And before that, we had a very jumpy, yeah, Kerry guys, let me take to the moon. He was trying to no-sell the Haunted House of Terror match, saying it wasn't really a match, but he was, well, still suffering the after effects of it, of course. Up comes a referee to inform Grimes his match against Kushida's next, but it's the same referee who did the jump scare in the Haunted House. So Grimes legs it. And he has his match following that with Kushida. They work pretty well together. Kushida again targeting the arm. He comes off the middle rope at one point with an avalanche shoulder breaker. Referee gets bumped twice in the midst of an O'Connor roll. Kushida applies the hoverboard lock. Grimes taps, but no one sees it. In the end, Grimes manages to nail Kushida with a one-man running Spanish fly. Again, no referee to count. A referee comes down, but as we saw earlier, it's the referee that scared Cameron Grimes. So he legs it in terror, runs straight into another hoverboard lock and submits. Pamela, what do you think?
I don't know. Repeat all my takes from the first match, but this was so great in flashes, like so great in flashes. It was too long. It had a slightly flabby middle portion. A little bit more detail on the individual wrestlers because it wasn't a complete like for like. But again, there was just so many similarities between the problems I had with the first match and the problems with the second match. This was spectacular at points, and I'm starting to think, right, and this is going to sound like me with my proper NXT shill hat on, I think they have got something that feels new in Kushida that isn't just, we're finally starting to exploit this fantastic New Japan wrestler. They have dialed up his aggression, and that was directed and it feels an important part of all his matches now, and I really like it. This is a, I'm not going to say it's an upgraded Kushida, let's just say it's an updated one. It's a different one, and it's one I think they seem to understand how to book a bit more, because as Cedric always points out correctly, Japanese and international wrestlers are typically done wrong by North American television, but they've dialed up the aggression to such a point where it's an easy thing for them to understand as a way to tell a story in a match. Just be really, really hard and dangerous, more so hard and dangerous than you ever were, high-flying and appreciative. And they've got that with Kushida now. And I think he is becoming a NXT title contender. And I think that reflects quite strong build for him from where he was at various points in his NXT career so far. But this match still went too long. And the finish was too silly. NXT still needs to respect its audience more than it does. The pre-match vignette was enough to sell us on how frightened Cameron Grimes was still of this referee, how spooked he was by the match he'd had with Dexter Lumis. Even some of the selling that Grimes did in the match of just being generally rattled, not by anything in particular, not by a zombie coming face-to-face, just still being a little bit rattled was good. You do not need to hit us over the head with it. Cameron Grimes can fall short because he is rattled, not because he is literally scared by the presence of the zombie referee in his presence. That was the beat too far for me in this one. Had they not done that, you would have probably had about 3 or 4 minutes less at the end, and this would have been everything it needed to be. Cameron Grimes has been properly broken up by this Halloween Havoc match. Kushida's on a tear. There's your story. But they went too literal. They went too daft. And I don't think they need to condescend as much as they do on this show.
Wishy-washy is the only phrase I can apply to this match. It did go too long. I wasn't that exhilarated when it was good because I think they've done better between them. I think Cameron Grimes looked a bit sluggish, and I've always loved his work in ring. There's a few moments where they were just off time, and I'd expect more from them, particularly when realistically in a match like this, you don't get like a blowaway match just in this new Capital One Wrestling, whatever it's called. I get it. You want to advance one person's character and the others at the same time, but just Cameron Grimes at this moment in time is the joke, and that's fine. It's a funny one. He had a visual win over Kushida at one point, and he didn't even do the cave-in. It was with a Spanish fly, and that instantly I just thought, well, Kushida's obviously not on the level that I thought he was before this show. Yeah, just didn't do a goddamn thing for me. And I thought the ref bump was executed like quite abysmally as well. I really didn't think this was a good segment of TV.
It was followed by my favourite part of this show, and we'll go across it. But it started with, well, obviously the best entrance theme in wrestling right now. That being Drake Maverick and Killian Dane's brilliantly catchy theme that I can't stop listening to this week. They were facing Ever Rise, but we don't really need to talk a lot about the match because that's not what the point was. It was about Pat McAfee hijacking NXT because he is amazing. The Ever Rise are targeting Maverick. No one cares for this part. I mean, I care about Maverick and Dane, but that'll be for another week because I care more about Pat McAfee and his pals showing up. They arrive. They come to the ring. It's McAfee, Pete Dunne, Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch, of course. They come down, they attack Maverick and Dane. They just ruin the match. McAfee is now the cameraman as well. He's filming them. He's filming himself. He's getting them to do big smiles for everyone. Say hello to the fans at home sort of thing. They come back, I believe, from the break. And McAfee, copy-paste again from last week, cuts a sensational promo that everyone else in NXT should probably be making notes on. Talks about how they are the best four-man group in wrestling. What makes them different from the other factions is they are not, quote, a bunch of scumbags. They're men of class. They're professionals. They were there tonight to honour Undisputed Era, the group that came them before them, that they ended, I should say. They run through the storied history of Undisputed Era forming, of course, Roderick Strong turning on Pete Dunne, them holding all the gold, and then what happened with Ridge Bloody Holland and all that. McAfee, in amongst all this, obviously puts over Burch and Lorcan, puts over Pete Dunne's massive bloody muscles. They've got an Undisputed Era flag. They're going to raise it to the rafters, but this is a democracy. Raise your hand if we should raise the rafters. Actually, you know what? Oh, and he buried the screens as well in this, which I really enjoyed. You know what? Let's just burn it. So they put it in a bin and set it on fire. They leave the building. Killian Dane tries to jump him and you know, get a bit of his heat back. The numbers game obviously catches up. Then Pete Dunne kicks a car door into his head. And McAfee, as he said quite a few times during this, leaves, concluding, "We're the greatest and you suck." Cheers, everyone. This was the highlight of NXT, wasn't it, Sige?
Yes. I've got some very, very nice things to say about it and some bad ones. One thing I'll say about Maverick and Dane, right, is that if this partnership's yielded one thing, and it's yielded quite a bit, if it's yielded one thing, they've taken a modern tag team spot and made it so much their own that it's just going to feel daft when other people do it. The throw the partner off the other person thing just works magnificently for this dynamic because Killian Dane has so little regard for Drake Maverick. So I really enjoyed how they've hit upon that works so perfectly for us. We can do that. Brilliant. The thing about this McAfee promo, right, is that the longer he talks, and he did go on a bit, and the more he does exposition, which he's good at doing, the more it feels like this program is baggier than it actually is. I don't know if that makes any sense, but what I'm getting at is that the more he goes through the beats and explains the beats, it's like, all right, okay, it is a bit of hard work, but it didn't feel like it. I don't know. I just thought he'd looped himself quite a bit here and there was no real need. I'd totally forgotten how Roddy Strong came into the Undisputed Era. I expect a lot of other fans did as well. Marvelous. Absolutely marvelous to point that out and indeed to book. So that was great. I just thought this went baggier than it needed to be and it wasn't just long in terms of why I didn't like it. I felt it just made everything feel a bit baggier than it needs to.
I mean, I would disagree, I suppose, but I thought this was awesome. I think I'd like the Dunne stuff was tremendous. And it's not just obviously that he's like drawing on that history with Roderick Strong and the fact that he's learned who to trust and who not to trust, but the fact that he's returned as kind of this different
Pete Dunne. So of course, yeah.
this physical difference really sells that as well. This upgraded Pete Dunne. I love this stable, the Kings of NXT. The Pat Pack is better, but the Kings of NXT is pretty good. They're Larkin and Birch are completely reborn,
yeah,
as the hitmen of this group. They're dangerous, they're violent. That's all you need to draw from them. Pete Dunne's obviously this guy that like is. I love how like even Pat McAfee was a little bit shocked by the car attack in particular. McAfee saw that, brilliant. Pat McAfee's pro wrestling instincts are fantastic. I do think this was more of a DVD extra from the promo we got last week. Like to kind of like to draw on what Sidgwick said, I do get where he's coming from, but he's so good and he's so natural. And I think his instincts are so strong for all of this that I think he got away with it anyway. The flag set on fire, fortunately enough, because that could have really killed the whole thing if it didn't. But we got the little shot of the bin on fire, which was great. But we've buried the lead, lads. We've buried the lead. Wilborn, normally I would never feel the need to pick holes in your analysis because you noted, obviously, that the Kings of NXT hit the ring and they attacked Drake and Killian Dane. But they didn't attack them first, did they? They hit Ever-Rise first. And you know what that means? That's a DQ win, baby. Two-match streak! Two-match streak!
Can I say one more thing?
That's a really good, cheap finish because Ever-Rise went backstage, hassled the referee, got the confirmation. The referee was like, I guess by the letter of the law, you were hit first yet. And that was them celebrating. The champagne was out the whole lot. Like, Ever-Rise were on a two-match streak. We've talked about them being the heels that Killian Dane and Drake Maverick beat properly and with some ease eventually en route to getting the tag title shot one day against Birch and Larkin. Like, I think, I know this won't be for everybody, I think that's good booking.
I liked, and one additional thing before we move on. I have Pat McAfee still just like, oh, he's coming to the wrestling world because I think he needs to deign it with his presence. I think I was just this glib sort of approach to what to do with pro wrestling ceremony. Like, do I hang things in the rafters? Do I set them on fire to make fire? I don't really know what I'm doing. That's what you're doing. I don't know. I just like how he doesn't just do these things because he's in the wrestling world now. It's like he's adjusting to them. I don't know why I like that touch so much. It just felt maybe a little bit real.
And the disruption of the show. Like normally you'd ring ahead, presumably in kayfabe, and say, "Yeah, we're coming, and you give us 5 minutes, or we're gonna talk, or we're gonna go into our history of Undisputed Era." They just ruined a perfectly good tag match and made sure, picture, side by side, to make sure no one's paying any attention to this tag match anymore. Because don't worry, lads, Pat McAfee's here. Like they're arriving for, the bloody Oscars or something, whilst the Oscars are still going on. And they're like, anyway, enough about that non-existent, best computer effects. No one cares about that. Look, because bloody Pat McAfee's here, isn't he? So great stuff. Really, really good. And how do you follow something as good as that with Johnny Gargano, who has just, oh my God, this was incredible. Johnny Gargano cuts a promo that I've watched about three times and pops me in different ways every time I watch it. Obviously, we talked, and if you haven't watched it, still go and watch it, about his promo on WWE.com with Candice LeRae after her loss at Halloween Havoc. This time, they were in the Gargano household, and I was very happy to be at home with the Garganos, because Johnny Gargano was talking about how much he bloody loves wheels, doesn't he? He's got a wheel in the background, you can see. He's always liked them. He's been saying he never liked wheels. He's playing, I think it was the Game of Life. It's a game with a wheel.
Because it's got a wheel. That's why. Yeah, like, what game's got a wheel?
And so he's cutting this promo. He's talking about, making history. Talking about, obviously, the fact that previously when he was NXT North American champion, I believe he lost it on his first defense. That's right, isn't it, Hamblet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's lost his North American and his NXT title in the first defense. Yeah,
exactly. And he talks about how, well, it's not going to be like that. Next week, I'm going to defend my title for the first of many occasions. And then he gets a phone call and he answers the phone. And oh my God, I always forget the name of the, it's Scream. What's the name of the Scream character?
It's Ghostface.
My brain always says, say Leatherface. And I was like, it's definitely not that character from a horror film. Gets the phone call from Leatherface. And Leatherface says, I'm in your house. And he goes, hello, you sat right next to me. They're playing the Game of Life. And he spins the wheel, mugs off Ghostface. And he was just great. Sidge, you have had a complete 180 on Gargano this year. What did you think of this?
It wasn't as good as his last two or three weeks, but it was still good. It's still good. It's still good. And you don't even have to invoke that tone, because you know it's good. Yet there's an act here. There's going to be weeks where it's a 7. There's going to be some weeks where it's a 10. This is a 7 for me. But just a little victory dance. I like this. Wheels. Just wheels, man. It's so funny. It's so stupid and so...
But it's, and also, like, with how much it'll piss off Candice, we're having loads of wheels around the house now.
Oh, of course. When I say it's stupid, no, it's not. It's like a really intelligent gag about a stupid person doing a really absurd thing.
It's a little bit of a psychopath by the end. Johnny always wins. Johnny loves wheels. Johnny always... he drilled it and drilled it and drilled it. I pissed myself at a couple of points of this. Me and Cedric have said this before. We try not to talk too much about these shows ahead of doing the podcast, because we record them in the morning over the virtual desks. We discussed Eddie Kingston and John Moxley, and as I put it, Johnny Gargano does a face, because every now and then he stops talking and then he purses his lips in a certain way that is there to pop you. He reminds me, and I don't think there's a bigger compliment amongst us three at the moment, he reminds me of Alistair Green. Follow him, yes, on Twitter if you don't already. But there's a delivery. Alistair Green's whole bit is that he is one person in a conversation. You are able to hear the entire conversation. You're able to read everything into his character from a 1.5 minute Twitter bit, effectively. He represents somebody that you've definitely met, or somebody that you definitely hate, or whatever. Gargano's tapped into that with this particular one. I thought the way he was just so down the lens with you, it wasn't to Candice. It wasn't even to Ghostface. He was there with him. It was to us. And I felt particularly unsettled by that. It's absolutely hilarious. And I just hope, because of the inclusion of Indy Hartwell in that Ghostface gear, this doesn't, like, because that's spooky adjacent, we're all still going to hope that Dexter Lumis isn't the next challenger for this. I do believe Gargano can get it over. I just don't, I'm not sure I want to see the match as good as he is in the ring as well. Because let's not forget, this is still Johnny Gargano. Like, every now and then you're going to get something like, for some people, not always Sidgwick, and certainly not always even myself, for some people approaching 5 stars out of the end product. But this is piss funny every week. I just don't necessarily want this to lead to Dexter Lumis.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
No.
Shotzi Blackheart versus Toni Storm came after that. Blackheart, she's so thrilling to watch that you get giddily caught with her, and then that almost transfers to her in the ring. There was a bit where she slipped on the ropes and fell in the ring early on, but recovered from that. Then there was this mad tornado DDT spot on the apron, and Toni Storm and Shotzi Blackheart spilled to the outside. There's a count out, which, I mean, didn't make any sense, if I'm perfectly honest, because Shotzi Blackheart made it into the ring to break up the count out. Why wouldn't the referee keep counting for Toni Storm, though? Because she's... So, doesn't matter. It does, but yes. I'll get into it because to cause a distraction, Candice LeRae pops up on the Titantron. By the way, Shotzi comes out just quite pissed off with Toni Storm, it seems, because she blames her because someone's taken Shotzi's tank. Well, Candice LeRae, in the midst of this count out moment, appears on the Titantron. She's found Shotzi's tank. Don't worry, though. She's going to look after it for her. All this distraction allows Toni Storm to get a roll-up victory on Shotzi Blackheart. And then LeRae says, not sure how long I can stay here and protect this tank, if I'm perfectly honest. Of course, up rolls up a bloody Hummer or whatever it is. Massive car rolls up. LeRae stops it, jumps in. Ghostface is in the back, for those of you paying attention. Starts driving. And I sort of love this. Because she starts driving and the tank is still good. Because it's being dragged along sort of in front of it. And then it's going. And then it just crumples underneath and gets smashed to pieces. LeRae says, now we're even. Because, of course, she's referring to Shotzi Blackheart getting involved in other people's business. I.e. what happened at Halloween Havoc with Ghostface and Io Shirai in the NXT Women's Championship. And Shotzi Blackheart sells this like a member of her family has died. Michael Hampler.
Yeah, the match was great in flashes. It went too long and it was a bit flabby in the middle, but it really had some great moments. Honestly, like, what was going on with this show? Like, they just got the in-ring agent in all wrong all night. I liked portions of this. I don't think it derailed Shotzi Blackheart's momentum in the defeat that we all predicted. I didn't mind. Distraction finishes have been bastardized and destroyed by WWE, right? But there are things that you can believe that wrestlers would be distracted by. And Shotzi Blackheart and that goddamn tank. She loves tank. We have seen vignettes about tanks. We've seen her entering on that tank. We've seen when the tank got stolen. She loves tanks. That's how you're going to take her attention away. The roll-up was...
When it comes to tanks, she apparently does give a...
Like, the roll-up was the most infuriating bit. Like, just hit your finisher, Toni Storm. Use the distraction and think, I've underestimated Shotzi Blackheart here. That's been the story of the whole match. Better put her away with the finisher. Don't roll her up, because that's that weird WWE protection thing. They're thinking, well, she only lost to a roll-up. That undermines the pair of them. That was so stupid.
Pro wrestling.
Yeah, like, so stupid and so needless. Hit your finisher. Totally buy the distraction. Just hated the roll-up. Loved the tank getting crushed. obvious thing to target. It was an inevitable thing to target. Babyface loves a thing. Go for that thing. Really, really like the direction for both Shotty Blackheart versus Candice LeRae, something I'm really into as a direction. Again, I kind of referred to this on the AEW review we've done. I thought there was some like quiet table setting done on this NXT, which is maybe why it didn't feel as exciting as Halloween Havoc, because that was more about payoffs. And this was that. Just really hated that they went with a roll-up and the match went a bit long.
I'll be significantly less kind. This is garbage. The match itself wasn't at all. It was trending towards something really good. That count-out spot was unforgivable, because they've taken something that you learn when you're like two or three. You apply to your knowledge of pro wrestling and drama and suspense and the rule and the framework of the rules the second you start to watch it. And they just broke the rule for no reason. Like, oh, come on. Don't take the piss out of me. I don't do that. Hate distraction finishes. I dislike, unless it's done really well, the camera, hey, look at me. A great segment has to follow that, or you should really sort of set it up in a nice in-character way. Didn't get that at all. The roll-up was stupid, because someone somewhere in that writer's room went, distraction roll-up? And they've said it in that tone as if to say, I don't know how you can use the words distraction roll-up in earnest without sort of a tone of corny desperation of like a resort. Like, can't distraction roll-up? And why distraction roll-up? Tony Storm, because it's like a second match. She didn't come across as a star here at all. And that's like bad booking. That is bad booking. I understand.
It's part of her entrance.
But they're all entrances. They're all entrances who work to the hard cam. That's what NXT fundamentally exists to do. They give you that TV thing, then you go to the main roster with the TV thing, and that's how they think you're a TV star, and it never works on that main roster, and that's where they learn it in NXT. I absolutely hated this.
What about the tanks, the actual tank destruction, etc.?
I mean, I like Shotty Blackheart, so by extension I like her tank. They are going to kill her, and I know it's her spot she did on the indies. She just loves aprons as much as she loves tanks. But, like, the idea is you're meant to have a wrestling company, even one that doesn't have a stated aim, like NXT, to develop talent. You're meant to have a wrestling company with old minds who know what to do and what not to do, and to tell the younger talents what not to do. How was that DDT on the apron spot not going to be a disaster or not going to fall apart? Was there even space to pull it off perfectly, much less experience and the factors that go into pulling off a spot like that? Ridiculous. Ridiculous. Like, they're going to indulge her and she's going to really hurt herself one of these days. I don't want to see it. Because she's so great at creating the energy of danger rather than actually endangering herself. I just hated 80% of this segment of television.
Ironically, she would be better off wrestling in a ball pit, because it might break some of the falls, I suppose.
Absolutely.
But I agree with both of you, though, that, you know, anyone else selling maybe you know, Cameron Grimes, if you stole his hat or bloody ripped up his vest or whatever. But I buy that Shotzi Blackheart could be devastated because her beloved tank has been run over by bloody Candice LeRae. Wheels involved again. Anyway, let's move on to another Thatch can session, which is, in my opinion, slowly rehabilitating Timothy Thatcher, because he's someone I want to see get his head kicked in, because he was doing a lesson today about reversals. I mean, he probably should have learned himself a few times, considering the amount of times he's bloody lost matches. But anyway, it's just him stretching a student again. It's him showcasing how you can get out of, I think it was a guillotine or something this time, or a blood choke, effectively. He shows you can reverse that into a Kimura, and then he lets his student showcase the Kimura, and then he just gets a bloody ankle lock and won't release it because he's a dickhead. Out comes Anthony Green, who got stretched previously, apparently setting up a match. But yeah, I'm changing my mind about how done Timothy Thatcher is in NXT. Are you, Michael Sidgwick?
No. No. I just can't possibly muster up any emotions about this. And I don't think that's just on my sort of generally cynical view of this brand. He's a loser who's lost a lot of matches, and this is the attempt to slowly rehabilitate him. It just feels like I'm circling the wagons with my takes here. He is great at wrestling. He's very much the wrestler, hence why he's doing the training segments. And he's lost loads of wrestling matches. There's a dissonance there that won't go away unless the work is so great that you're just willing to forget and not stewing in it. Because if you're analysing it coldly, you're going to stew on these bits that you don't like because you're not swept up in what is good. And yeah, I just can't really care about this. I don't necessarily love that style of pro wrestling anyway. Like grapple foot, as it is called. It's just not particularly for me. I admire the hell out of it when it's really done well, but it's not something I would ever seek out. It's not something I really value in my favourite pro wrestlers. So this just doesn't do a great deal of anything for me.
Is there a way to salvage Thatcher in particular, Hamplet, by not necessarily explaining away, but at least, you know, grafting away, justifying some of those losses, that he sort of believes his own hype in the fact that he gets these, you know, new wrestling students in and goes, well, I can just, you know, stretch them left, right and centre and get, you know, submissions wherever I want. And he sort of drank his own Kool-Aid there. And therefore, when he goes up against a Finn Balor, he suddenly realises, well, unless, you know, he gets an injury that I can target, which we saw happen in that match, I really need to probably spend a bit more time on the mats practicing my own skills rather than just showing it off to other people.
Oh, I mean, maybe, but what's the ceiling creatively for any of that, really? I didn't think this was bad, but I thought it was like painfully basic. You know, like, so August Gray, I believe he's going by, is going to get a match with Timothy Thatcher off the back of this. And Timothy Thatcher's going to beat him. And it's, as you say, he can dominate in Thatcher's Thatcher can. He can win against people that are very obviously inferior than him, then give him, you know, that he pretends to give a fighting chance to before he beats them easily. But what, you just loop that every now and then he takes on a bigger and better babyface and loses? I don't know. This was hyper-functional, but I don't think it was particularly entertaining. And I feel like already, like, I can visualise exactly how the match goes, which is a big fire-up babyface moment before Thatcher just puts him away. Because he is superior and he is more dominant. And then we're back to Thatcher's Thatch can for a bit. Or we're back to a babyface saying, why don't you pick on some, not somebody your own size, but you know what I mean? Why don't you pick on somebody like me? Another grappler comes in and wants piece of him or whatever. I don't know. I think there's a very, very low ceiling on what they can creatively achieve with this character.
This is their attempt to make a TV star out of a professional wrestler who has a style that isn't suited to TV, and I think it's fatalistic on that basis.
Earlier on in the night, we'd had Io Shirai challenging Rhea Ripley to a title match. Ripley accepted the challenge. How do you see this one going, Hamlet, in terms of how they set this up and when?
It appears like, after the other stuff was set up in the women's division tonight, that it's going to be at TakeOver. I really like this. I'm assuming you're going to get to it, the TV feud that they're going to set up, this last little hurdle, I suppose, for Rhea Ripley and Xia Li. Yeah, I like it. I think it's where Rhea Ripley needs to be. I think it's very worthy of a takeover. I think it'll feel big time. I think Rhea Ripley's found her form again, because it wasn't just that the booking was failing her a little bit in the middle of the year. It seemed as if she'd had her confidence wrecked by the WrestleMania loss or something. Just the edge wasn't there. From when she won the title, when she defeated Shayna Baszler. I think that's back. I think there's enough good matches to make you realise just how great this could be. Could headline if they want to. It's as, you know, much a top title as Finn Balor's at this point anyway. So yeah, I'm up for it. My fear is, right, is that I'm quite into this Rhea Ripley, Xia Li thing, because she just thinks she's going to breeze past her. And you sense now that we're going to get the payoff to whatever this Xia Li situation is. Like what she's been under fire for, under threat for. I'm quite interested in that element of the story. But my fear is, after the fact, they're not going to bother telling any more story with Rhea Ripley and Io Shirai. It's tended to be in Io's feuds about the opponent more than it has been the champion. They've not really tried very hard to actually get you to the show. They'll just say, here's the match, see you in a month or something like that. And because it's Io, you know, you can have reasonable expectations. So that's my worry, is that they're not going to put enough thought into the actual story. The video packages will be great, but the promos and the beats won't be.
I will be astonished if they manage to craft a genuinely compelling, I need to see what's happening this week, story between Rhea Ripley and Io Shirai. I will leave it at that. Obviously, the match is going to be great. I feel like I've said something to this effect on virtually every single NXT review podcast I've ever done. That genuinely does remain a problem with this brand, and I don't think it's going to get rectified with this particular program as much as the match will be utterly, utterly fantastic.
It's like an easy storyline to write as well of, you know, Rhea Ripley's redemption was going to come in your house and then, you know, Io Shirai took it away from her and she's had to rebuild from there. But yeah, I mean, I'm concerned that they are just going to, like Hamlet says, just say, well, the match is in December. See you then. Xia Li, you mentioned her there. There was a backstage segment with her being questioned about these letters and stuff that she's received. I believe she said it was from her family. She was trying to, you know, just really defend almost her family's honor in there. And she called for a match against Raquel Gonzalez. I'm remembering that right.
That's right. She's going to get battered. She's going to get battered by her, isn't she? Like Raquel Gonzalez off the back of the Rhea Ripley thing is going to absolutely brutalize Xia Li when she's that desperate to prove herself now.
And announced for next week, two title matches. Johnny Gargano defending his North American Championship against an unnamed opponent, and Breezango challenging Lorcan and Birch. And Pat McAfee probably ruining that match to my absolute delight. So looking forward to those next week. Main event time, Michael Hamlet. It's Tommaso Ciampa versus Velveteen Dream.
Skip. Yeah, Skip, what we got in the review this week? What do you want, man? Like, I can never watch this engage. Velveteen Dream doesn't deserve your analysis, unfortunately. WWE have never been transparent. He was named in speaking out allegations. Tommaso Ciampa is a dead rubber of a character right now. This was a disastrous booking beforehand. And yet again, they try to do that thing and they're leaning into it. And I don't like it, where fans are like, hey, man, as long as Velveteen Dream gets a kick in, this is all right by me. It's fake, this, mate. They're working together. They're colleagues. Oh, yeah. Like, none of this connected. Absolutely none of it at all. Which might be for the best with Ciampa, because, again, his character feels all over the place. This didn't speak to the promo that he cut last week. He worked predominantly as a babyface. He got the big win. NXT, through their Twitter account, have uploaded this really quite lame, rabble-rousing speech from Ciampa after the taping. You know, there's some truth to it. He's talking about how much they missed fans. He's talking about how much he believes him and Gargano desperately missed them earlier this year. He says each and every one of you about five times. I didn't count the year C's. I just don't think they know what they want to do with Ciampa, and this match was evidence of that. And that was the only thing I could really draw from it, because I don't know, either be completely transparent about what happened with Velveteen Dream or stop using Velveteen Dream.
Yeah, before I get your thoughts, Sidge, I'll just run through what happened in the match. Obviously, Dream's still got the cast on his hands. An injury that could have written him off TV. Anyway, Ciampa targets that, batters his hand off everything. Dream comes back, suplex Ciampa over the ropes out of the ring. Dream eventually throws a chair into the ring, but as he jumps off the top rope, Ciampa hits him with a jumping knee strike. Widow's belt, fairy tale ending. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, I realise we've kind of gone over this topic, Sidge, but what or who is next for Tommaso Ciampa? Like, there's a tiny bit of me that worries that Gargano is going to come out next week and go, he wants a shot at this NXT North American Championship, and then just go, Tommaso Ciampa.
They're not allowed, and they are very strict when they adhere to stipulations. On the match itself and the dynamic and all the rest of it, it feels like, right, they had a match in better times that are unrecoverable at a takeover, and it was unbelievable. Just unbelievable. Which shows you how good Tommaso Ciampa was, or maybe can be, considering what we know of how Velveteen Dream realistically was carried all along in a lot of these instances, or he was produced within an inch of his life. And this feels like just the rubber band that he used to like, and one of them is like a wrong, and you know, they just all feel a bit grim. And it's like, are they coming back? It's like, aye, where? At the arena? No, they're just playing the academy. It's like, all right, okay, yeah. Definitely give that one a miss. That's just the total vibe to this main event on your television show. Ciampa, Do objectively really good, boring bastard stuff with Thatcher. He can stand up for the trainees. If anyone needs to be doing this kind of thing and teaching NXT a lesson, it should be me. You've only just turned up here. Let the boring bastards be boring together. And the Tommaso Ciampa used to be great. He could do something with Thatcher, realistically, and a lot of wrestling fans would like it. I wouldn't. But you could do that. The worst thing about Tommaso Ciampa's current existence right now is that it's the old Marty Jannetty Shawn Michaels thing, which I used to hate, but Marty Jannetty fantasizes about committing hate crimes, so I don't hate the analogy anymore, even though Marty Jannetty was great in the ring. It's old Marty Jannetty Shawn Michaels thing. Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa were, at the start of this year, in the spring of this year, both a parody of what they once were. Johnny Gargano is now amazing, completely and utterly redefined his character, and he's hysterical, and he's great, and Tommaso Ciampa is still there. And the fact that Gargano has done it at the same time as he's totally stagnated, it just brings into focus that stagnation all the more. You realistically, at this point, considering he's not going to the main roster, considering everything Tommaso Ciampa's done as this version of Tommaso Ciampa is so excessive to the point of parody, he needs a complete and utter repackage or a complete change of scenery. And that never works out on the main roster, does it? Because we've seen it on NXT. He needs a complete and utter evolution of his character for me to be remotely invested in it.
What do you reckon, Amplet?
Same. I cannot currently visualise how I can possibly care about Tommaso Ciampa. It feels as if we've probably laboured on this point on other pods. Like, they've done it all as well. That's the real worry for a Ciampa. It feels like they've done every version of himself. He got there and he was the up-and-coming guy with a little psychopathic glint in his eye. He was the spunky babyface tag team partner. He turned. He was so incredible in his rehabilitation of his neck that he was a natural babyface after the fact. They exploited that to the point where it kind of overexposed him. And maybe they missed the boat on him. Maybe it wasn't about just overexposing him. Maybe it was just, well, if you don't put the belt back on him at the first opportunity that he gets at it, then maybe you kill that. I don't know. It feels dead as a babyface. It feels dead as a heel. It feels dead in a tag team. They've got to think way, way outside the box. And even NXT, when it's good, doesn't think a lot outside the box. That's not really how they've ever done it.
Gargano's the exception here, isn't he?
Yeah, I would say so. They do good stuff. But I don't know. It's going to take something. They can do it. They're capable. But it feels like we're on this umpteenth failed attempt with Ciampa. And I don't know what the answer is.
This is the most anyone's ever talked about all year.
Yeah, let's wrap up by deciding who won the Wednesday Night War, Michael Hamlet.
AEW. I thought NXT was good, but AEW is really great at hyping you for full gear. Really great.
Sage?
AEW. Dynamite. NXT fell into certain traps that it tends to do, that the nature of those results will accumulate over time to create this sort of cloak of numbness to how you view too many of its talent. And the booking patterns were like, oh God, like, oh, come on NXT, you're better than that. AEW Dynamite was a great show with one of my favourite pro wrestling moments ever on it. And if you can tolerate my shilling any more of a NXT fan listening to this podcast, go out of your way to watch whatever it was that Eddie Kingston and Jon Moxley did on Dynamite, because I think that is universally, objectively genius, and it's worth the attention of anyone who's ever liked pro wrestling.
Yeah, I think both shows had dodgy main events for very different reasons, but I am inclined to agree that I think it was AEW's week. Dynamite, obviously, like you say, a go-home show, had a full gear with some really exciting stuff. Now, I loved parts of this show, but I think, yeah, generally, what Hamlet said for about three different matches applies to the majority of this show, if we're perfectly honest. And that is kind of reflected on our Twitter vote at WhatCultureWWE, 60-40 in favour of AEW Dynamite. But of course, we will count all the votes before an official decision is made. Do let us know your thoughts on NXT on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. What you say, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamlet at
Michael Hamlet.
Or Michael Sidgwick at
M. Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at What Culture WWE, of course. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. For daily wrestling podcasts, our review of Dynamite is available right now. And looking ahead to Full Gear this weekend, myself and Sidgwick will be doing a preview of that. That comes out on Saturday. And me and Michael Hamper will be reviewing Full Gear in the immediate aftermath of that show on, I don't know, Sunday at some point. But anyway, this has been the Wednesday Night War review of NXT. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.